Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. And my guest today, Rebecca Bannon, is a woman that came out with a book a few years ago called The Silicon Dragon, where she was really involved with researching on what was happening in China, in Asia. Well, she's come out with another book called Start Up Asia, Top Strategies for Cashing In on Asia's Innovation Boom. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks very much, Donna.
Now, you have been so much involved in this. You have a newsletter you put out. You put together conferences and tech hotspots. You have been very, very much involved in educating people about this phenomenal growth curve in China. Now, here in the United States, there's been a lot of challenges relative to innovation, but we've always been known for this. And so much of what I read in this book, Startup Asia, with so many of the individuals that you interviewed, they had come to the United States for their education, and they took what they learned here, and they've taken it over into the Asian environment, which doesn't surprise me, and they've adapted that to their particular cultural environment. Just for a brief background, Rebecca, what was it that turned you on to become an investigative reporter of what's happening in the world of technology, medicine, et cetera, in the overseas market?
Well, I have a curious mind, and I like travel. I like learning about new things, so it was a combination of those two interests of travel and curiosity, and I like writing about new things as well, anything new, new and exciting, and which China certainly is, and this whole innovation boom in China certainly is. I've always approached this as a journalist, and the articles I wrote about China and the many startups in the tech scene led to my first book, Silicon Dragon. And then I've just continued to follow the story as a journalist, and that led to my second book, Startup Asia.
You have really developed a wonderful rapport with so many of the leading entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurship is historically not new to China, but China has gone through such phenomenal shifts and changes just in the last 50 years. And one of the most dramatic was the cultural revolution that they went through that destroyed a lot of the intellectual, innovative aspect of China. And now they're starting to come alive again. Even though there are still some of the old guard around, there's this wonderful, innovative aspect with the youthful entrepreneurs that is really good. But you don't just cover China in Startup Asia. You talk about India and also about Vietnam. And so many of us, when we hear about Vietnam, we have memories of the war, we have all kinds of things, but that's almost erased. So we'll be touching on each of this. I was impressed in your foreword that you made a statement about how American companies, such as AOL, MSN, eBay, and many, many others, did not have an easy time and still do not have an easy time in China because they are focused on short-term profit. The teams that are working there just haven't a clue about the culture, and they have an inattentive attitude of tailoring their products to the culture that they're trying to get into with their business momentum. I remember reading something not too long ago. That was a problem that the Americans had in the 1930s when they were working with the Chinese. What do you think it's going to take to change that?
Well, you know, I do think we're seeing this whole innovation thread come alive in China and elsewhere in Asia, particularly India. So in my book, I compare China and India and talk about how India is probably about 5-6 years behind China on the innovative and the entrepreneurship. But there are many things that are driving both of these markets forward, and I think will continue for the long foreseeable future. The mobile communications market is China and India have the world's largest mobile communications market, the largest number of mobile phone users. China has the largest number of internet users. Obviously, China and India have, you know, the world's largest populations. There's a middle class that's booming in both of these markets, so that people can afford to buy, you know, the latest gadgets, whether it's the iPhone or, you know, a Nokia phone or whatever. And things are moving very quickly to the mobile internet, skipping right over the personal computer and going directly to the mobile internet. Because, you know, one of the aspects is that because China and India have developed at their own speed and their own pace, they are able to skip over kind of the legacy products that are in the more developed markets. So I think this is still a really young trend and is going to continue to evolve in China and India for a number of years. Now, whether it's going to catch up to the U.S. Anytime soon is a big question mark. But I think there's a lot of momentum behind it, and I think already China is the world's second largest venture capital market, and India is the third largest venture capital market behind the U.S. And the number of patents from China has just soared in the past couple of years. Now China ranks fourth in the world for new patent applications. And it's just an amazing story of how this has happened in such a short period of time, only in about a decade plus.
That's true. That's true. And you go into venture capital and you give an example. You say how venture capital can really fuel economic growth. And you said startups in the United States contributed 21% of the U.S. gross domestic product and 12 million jobs in 2009. And that was just one example. And that is so very, very true. You also say the finest grads from Yale, Harvard, Princeton, Stanford, MIT, and Berkeley, and the elite of Sand Hill Road, people who started Cisco, Google, and Facebook, go to Asia, and the startup game is increasingly playing out in the world's fastest-growing region and its next superpower. Let's get into talking about a few people that you wrote about, which are just absolutely dynamic entrepreneurs. And correct me if I mispronounce their names, please. Si Shen, he mm-hmm. is 29 years old, at least at the time of your writing. And she was unbelievably amazing in what she was able to do. Because in women, China usually don't have a front positioning in the economic area, but by golly, she's taken one.
Yeah, and she's so young, a real superstar, and a Stanford grad, Tsinghua, the top school in Beijing for technology, sort of the Stanford of China. She's a graduate of that as well. She worked at Google in China and for a few years and got her experience and got her education in the West, and she did her own startup called Papaya Mobile, which is it's something for the mobile phone. It's a game for the mobile phone and for the Android phone. And she managed to attract some very big investors behind her, big venture capital investors behind her, and I think she's off to a strong start. She's very young. She's not even 30 yet.
You bring out points of information about doing business in China. You say there's cracks in the wall. China lacks the creative thinking, open communications, and advanced educational system that can foster full-scale disruptive innovation
like we did here in the U.S. with Silicon Valley and so many other companies. And you say doing business in China also means dealing with corruption, fraud, lack of the rule of law, inflation, censorship of web content, and China is notorious for its counterfeiters, and we all know how it has become an industry in and of itself, where it's copycat technology, mm-hmm. whether it's Gucci purses or cell phones. So you have that. Now, India is different. India, you describe as being a democracy. There still is the bureaucracy that you have to deal with. And yet they have taken a different approach. You think that they're about 5 years behind China in their mm-hmm. technology, but mm-hmm. a lot of people that have been educated in the United States that have the Indian background are going back to India, mm-hmm. and some of the programs that are being done are just absolutely amazing. In fact, one of them that you called Clean Tech, which I think is phenomenal. And they're wanting to make this a global operation. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, one of the key differences between the Chinese startups and the Indian startups is that the Indian startups tend to go global, whereas the Chinese startups are mostly tapping their own local domestic market and then thinking about branching out and expanding overseas. So part of that is the English language compatibility with India, but it's also because India has this long outsourcing tradition, and India has served, the Western markets with outsourcing services. So it's been part of the culture of India business for a long time. So maybe it's not too surprising that the startups would also have this global outreach, even from day one. There's a company that I write about called InMobi, and it's a mobile advertising network based out of India. And they're already the world's second largest global mobile advertising network, and it's from India. It's a startup. So that's one example of these Indian startups that are expanding their reach. And it's happening in the clean technology space as well. One of the interesting startups that I write about from India is called Atero Recycling. And mm-hmm. what they do is they recycle electronic parts, and then they have this huge facility on the banks of the Ganges River in India, and then they separate out the precious metals from the electronic parts and then sell those precious metals on commodity exchanges, and that's their business model. But also doing good for the India environment as well, because getting rid of these electronic products has been a huge problem, environmental problem in India. I think clean technology is a hot area, both in China and India.
Yes, big time, because in India there are so many women that were boiling the plastic down to do this extraction, and it's so toxic. And to be able to shift into something like this where there is massive amounts. And this is a reality. People are just dumping their equipment like crazy. So this story about this company and what they're doing, I think, is an inspiration to any country in the world to be able to take charge of this so that this toxicity doesn't go into the environment. And also in India, I was very impressed with a story that you talked about Sudhir Sethi. It's IDG Ventures. You're talking mm-hmm. about they're developing a robotics-operated medical device, and they work with GE Healthcare in India, and it is just amazing. It can guide a needle to biopsy a tumor with a safe and much simpler procedure meant to diagnose early-stage cancer. There's a patent that's been filed for this invention in the United States, but they are able to actually have fine quality equipment. Their standards are very high, and they're able to do it at a cost that's much less than, let's say, what the U.S. has been able to do. So in each of these areas, China, India, and then Vietnam, we have a whole new approach, and this is forcing a lot of companies, including superstars like Google, to really stay on their toes, because this is a global marketplace that has just exploded with this advancing disruptive technology.
Yeah, and you mentioned Google. One of the interesting startups that I discovered in my travels and in Asia was in Vietnam. It's a Vietnamese search engine from Hanoi, built by a group of classmates from the University of Hanoi. And their story is really interesting because they turned down an offer, an acquisition offer by Google a few years ago when their startup was only 2 years old. And this Vietnamese search engine is the number one search engine in Vietnam for the mobile, in the mobile space. And mobile is where it's at in Vietnam. It's not so much the internet on the PC, it's mobile. So this is a very scrappy young entrepreneur who's running this company called Sockday out of Hanoi. And I think it's just amazingly courageous that he decided to keep going on his own rather than take the buyout offer from Google. Google wanted him to move him and his team to Silicon Valley, and he didn't want to.
Right. And what I find so fascinating with your book, with each one of the people that you write about, they are so much like the entrepreneurs in America. They are just in a different country. These are people like Nguyen, who, and you say in Vietnam, so many have that name, and if I've mispronounced it, please correct me. But this is a very common name. But these people came from impoverished circumstances. They were totally controlled by the state, and they're breaking away from that. India is known as a democracy. Vietnam is working towards that positioning. They still have a lot of challenges. And, you know, communism was rampant there, and the dictates, these people left en masse so that they could have some kind of a decent life and be able to do things and support their families and be innovative. And I just find these stories so inspiring. These people just have a real drive. They really feel like they can accomplish something. When you told the story of the one Vietnamese man, he was the son of a former government worker in a very poor town in central Vietnam. He was exposed to computers when he was 13, immediately fell in love with them, and had a passion for it and went for it. And this is his life. This is his work. This is something that I think many times people don't realize, that innovation isn't exclusive to just one environment. It's all over the world. And when people have the opportunity to move forward with it, they do.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely thriving. And there's so many commonalities with Silicon Valley. In many of these hotspots that I talk about, you have the same ecosystem of, you know, a strong university or a couple of strong universities driving so much of the innovation, these young graduates from these top universities, and then all the services that spring up around them, the tech park, the venture capitalists, The whole infrastructure is there. The talent, it tends to attract more and more talent, more and more young talent. And so you have these tech hotspots that develop, like we've seen in the U.S., in Silicon Valley, in Seattle, in the Cambridge, Boston area, and pockets of it elsewhere. So the same factors are driving this a tech ecosystem, tech innovation boom in places in Shanghai, in Beijing, in Bangalore, in Hanoi. And, you know, the people are driven by the same sorts of passions and pursuits and ambitions that you would see here in the U.S. It just runs in the DNA of the entrepreneur personality of being, you know, very independent and maverick and wanting to try new things and not fearing failure. And, you know, it is encouraging to see.
I think so. And something that happens with this, in China, as the entrepreneur factor has come into play, as the tech industry has been growing over there, the economic base has become a lot healthier. And there is a point that you bring out that I think is very significant, and especially when it comes to American business, and that is in both the in all three of these nations, Vietnam, China, and India, you have a tremendous population that is in the position today where it wasn't so much even 10 years ago. They're better able to afford products. And this is a consumer class. And this is absolutely incredible when you come to the other side of the water. When people are in business in the U.S., if they can be inspired with their own enthusiasm and realize there is something over there that may want what we have.
Right, right, yeah. The one example is the huge lines at Apple stores in Beijing. When the new iPhone 4 came out, there was just a stampede on the new Apple store. They had to shut down temporarily just to control the crowds. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting to watch. IKEA, for instance, is also a very strong brand in China, and people socialize, go there to socialize and have coffee with one another and hang out. And the shopping malls are filled, and it definitely is developing into a consumer economy. And e-commerce is one of the drivers. One of the companies that I write about is Dangang, and they're like the Amazon of China. And they're going strong. They're already publicly listed in the U.S. And there's a whole host of other e-commerce companies that have taken off from China and India, many of them in specialized fields. And not necessarily books and consumer goods, but other things as well. And I think online commerce is a real area to watch in these Asian markets. Just like e-commerce has developed here in the U.S., it's developing too.
You talk about Taiwan. You go into a great deal of detail regarding each of these nations, and the information is very, very current. And though it can be difficult, dependent on what your business is, maybe to make inroads, I think one of the biggest things to understand is the culture, because these are people that have particular patternings that if you understand them and you work within that cultural environment, you can really do very, very well. And I think that that is something that Americans need to come to understand. It's not push, shove, and gee, we're going to get it our way. We need to understand the thinking of the other people. And again, this is something that was a problem when we were dealing in Asia, even in the 30s. And it was a good when a few people understood how to work with that. And it's a skill to be able to deal with different cultures. But you have wonderful tips throughout the book that you put in a little box that is, and you've extracted from the interviews that you've done. And they are so down to earth, and they're so basic. And these people that you have interviewed, like Rabhata in Bangalore. These are people that are very real people, and they were very open with you. When you set up these interviews, Rebecca, what's one of your biggest challenges that you have to face in doing them?
Well, I actually find them, it's something that I love to do. I have a great passion for interviewing entrepreneurs from all over the world, and I don't find it very challenging, actually. I I suppose maybe the biggest challenge is trying to schedule as many as I can while I'm there. What I'll do is I'll go into a market for India and spend several weeks there, maybe a month, and I will cram in a number of interviews with entrepreneurs in various cities. So I suppose juggling my schedule is the biggest challenge. I don't find it difficult interviewing the entrepreneurs at all. They're very open. They want to tell their story. I seem to relate to them. They enjoy being interviewed, and they don't mind the tough questions either. So the whole process has been very rewarding for me as a journalist, because I'm pioneering many of these areas as a Western journalist going into these Asian markets and interviewing these entrepreneurs, sometimes the first time they've been interviewed by Western press. And it's great to be on the frontier like that and not be a follower, but actually creating new things on my own. And I just love doing that.
Now, when you do your books, because this information is so timely and you give datelines and all of this here, when you get your material, how long did it take you to put this together? How many months did it take of traveling and interviewing so that you were able to compile all the data that you've got in your book and be able to write it in language that a layperson is comfortable with?
Well, you know, it's a long, for me, it's a matter of I've covered this area for over a decade, so I've watched this whole trend develop, and I've developed the contacts in order to get these interviews and be able to go into these markets. So it's really a decade-long process of these two books. But the second book, my first book came out in 2008, and then I started work on this new book, Startup Asia, in mid-2009 with a trip to Taiwan. I did a tech tour of Taiwan and went to all the software parks and interviewed a number of leading technology companies out of Taiwan and then startups as well. And then I went to India. I went to China many, many times. I've been to China over 50 times now. I went to Vietnam a couple of times, all doing interviews. So the interviews are probably the most time-consuming part of it because I travel and do all my own research and all my own interviews. The writing part, pulling it all together, took about 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that is it's a very intensive, you know, labor of love kind of process. Of writing and pulling all the material together and making sure all the facts are right and getting all the interviews that, you know, collating all the information, deciding what goes in, what doesn't go in. I don't put in, some entrepreneurs I interview, not everybody makes it into the book.
Mm-hmm.
I choose the most interesting stories, the most interesting people, those who have the most telling examples. And I don't just write about the success stories as well. There are some failures in there. Some lessons learned along the way. So it is kind of a strategy book in that way, in that you can look at these entrepreneurs in there and their journey of doing a startup as, you know, as a great case study, you know, could
mm-hmm.
be used even in a classroom.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
I think it's marvelous. Rebecca, I think your words where you say we live in a globally connected world with lightning-fast communications 24 hours a day, yes, that is absolutely true. Technology is moving forward with a phenomenal, amazing series of results that what we thought wasn't going to be possible 20 years ago, it's happening with an incredible speed. What is your website so people can find out about your newsletter? And because you put out a beautiful newsletter and the other things that you're involved with. What is your website?
SiliconDragonVentures.com. SiliconDragonVentures.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then I write for Forbes as well. I do a column for Forbes. So if you do a search on my name, Rebecca Fannin, and Forbes, you'll find many, many columns I've written about innovations globally, and that's in Forbes, and my monthly newsletter and my events through Silicon Dragon. In fact, I'm having a Silicon Dragon Beijing event. It's our third year in Beijing. That's coming up May 31st, and then Shanghai in September, also our third year. So I'm being part of the community and building these events and bringing together entrepreneurs in these various cities. We also have an entrepreneur award in Shanghai, in Beijing, in Hong Kong. So it's really a platform for encouraging this entrepreneurship to continue to foster.
Well, Rebecca Fannin, you have got a fabulous book here. Any of you that want to be aware of business, if you are an entrepreneur yourself, you will find it absolutely inspirational. I recommend it highly. Startup Asia, check out our website, SiliconDragonVentures.com. Rebecca Fannin, thank you very much for being my guest. I look forward to your next book, and enjoy your travels.
Thanks, Donna. I enjoyed it as well.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com. And find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Hi, welcome back to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna Sebo speaking here, and I am so excited. I have changed to this morning slot, and it's absolutely wonderful. I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. By the way, I want to let you know about the guests that are coming up next week. We have got a dynamic
eclectic programming for next week, as we always do with the Donna Sebo Show. We're going to be starting off next week with The Lost Secrets of Mayan Technology. This is a thrilling book because we are going to find out about things that only recently archaeology has been able to recognize because of our technology. It's really exciting stuff. Then we're going to be talking with, and that's put out by James Ocon, Wayne Brillhart is a gentleman that on Tuesday we're going to be talking with. This is a man that's been involved with education. He's put out an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous book called The Mystery at the Bird Feeder. On Wednesday of next week, we're going to be replaying a program. We'll have a Best of Donna. I'm speaking at a Chamber of Commerce meeting, so I'm not going to be able to do the morning show, but I'll be back live on Thursday. We're going to be talking about baseball. That's right. Shipwrecked, A People's History of the Seattle Mariners. John Wells is a reporter who has talked about this baseball team that, I'm telling you, you wonder if they're ever going to be at the top of the game. So he's going to be giving us the real dirt behind what goes on behind the scenes. And then quantum thinking, Diane Collins is going to be our guest. This is a woman that is very innovative and believes in the expansion of the process of not just thinking, but of expanding our own lives. So we have got a very diversified group of shows next week. I invite you to tell your friends because you don't want to miss it. There is so much good information here. And if you want to know a little bit of a write-up about those people that are being featured, you can go into the show information section that is listed under the Donna Sebo Show here on bbsradio.com and find out more. Also, quickly, I want to mention my class tomorrow in Seattle. For those of you that are in Seattle, Washington, it is on flower readings. This is something that I learned many years ago under the tutorage of a very fine man whose name is Reverend Humble. And he is a man that just loved to teach this to people, and I was one of his students, and it is more fun. So go to my website. You can check it out at DelphiInternational.com. Go into my website, look at the events calendar, and you'll have all the details about the Ascension in the Light Foundation at 122 South Weller Street. You'll have a contact number. Let them know if you're going to come to the class. It's only $25, and it's from 1 to 4 in the afternoon tomorrow. Technology. We were talking about the effects with China and India and Vietnam with the book startup, you know, in Asia. And I'll tell you, so many times I hear people getting very angry about how this is happening over there and they've taken all of this from us and that. Look, competition is a part of life. And in my opinion, in my observation, because I deal with so many people from around the world in my counseling and in my radio programming, nobody has the total edge on anything. So innovation is the key, and that is what the American spirit has always demonstrated to people in other parts of the world. So is it a surprise when we have people that have come to our wonderful country to get their education, that they're going to take the wisdom and knowledge and take it back home? No, that's not a big surprise. So instead of getting agitated over the wrong stuff, let's clean up our messes, let's get innovative here, and give them a run for the money. Remember, this is and always has been an international world that we've lived in, and the marketplace is extensive, and that's why doing internet programming like what I'm doing is just fabulous. To be able to do this in the way that it was done years ago would have been cost prohibitive. So all of these changes, they are disruptive. And if you're like me, every time there's a new something with software, you sort of groan and go, oh my goodness, I just am getting to the point where I understand one aspect of what I'm doing, or two or three, maybe 10, and now I've got to expand into this. That's the name of the game. And it is not good, it's not bad. It's just part of what we have going on in this phenomenal world that we live in. Is there the negative? Of course there's always the negative. There's always two sides to a coin. But it's what you do with what you have. It's what you move into. Do you remember the movie The Red Planet with Arnold Schwarzenegger? I thought whoever put that script together was just amazing, and they were very futuristic. If you recall, in The Red Planet, he walked through a scanner. They didn't have scanning booths like we have now, and they're all going to be obsolete within a short period of time. Millions, billions of dollars, it's just going to go sort of supposedly down the tubes. But the reality is, in that, they showed someone walking through. So he was carrying a gun, bingo. It was automatically seen and set off alarms. Well, that is something that's not that far off in the future. And I have in front of me an article that is just absolutely wonderful. When I came across it, I thought, this I want to share with you because it is absolutely amazing. You know that I read so much material because I have guests on 5 days a week. Well, I found this article in Discover Magazine, and it came out in the May issue, and it's on planes of the future. And if you have ever seen the cartoons, the Jetsons, and all of that stuff, well, it's getting closer to reality. Those imaginative moments of cartoons are just like the Red Planet, the minds of people that are saying, this is possible. Well, you get the idea going, and there are always going to be those people who are innovative that want to make it happen. Well, how would you feel about flying in a plane that not only had a larger cabin, but you were able to have things going on in the plane? You might be able to do your workout while you're on the plane. Aha, you don't think it's possible? I got news for you. In front of me is a drawing of a plane that looks like a manta ray. A manta ray. It's absolutely beautiful. And these are some of the points they brought out. They have this extreme drawing that is just absolutely gorgeous. And it is showing how by 2050, there are going to be planes that are so large they'll resemble cruise ships. They might even have a swimming pool in them. They, you know, have sushi bars, restaurants. They're going to have video capability, all kinds of things. Now, this is the futuristic type of thinking. And the wings, instead of having slats and flaps, we've all seen them, those of us that fly frequently, we pay attention to little things like that. The wings are going to be covered with sensors and small moving plates, allowing them to change shape during flight and counteract turbulence. And Airbus already is working on how to put small, quickly responding air jets to improve aerodynamics. Passenger cabins, blending wings with fuselage would permit a much more spacious and comfortable interior. You can have comfortable seats. Wouldn't that be a first? Oh, boy. How long have we sat in seats that are miserably uncomfortable? And you've got personalized videos, well, maybe even have holograms that you can have. Flight deck. Pilots will use spoken commands, touch screens. They're already using some of this. There's military stuff that all of this is currently employing. And there's just so much going on. And this has all been an evolutionary process. We've had such sophisticated technology, much of it which was hidden from the private market because it was going into military applications, and now so much of it is coming out. So this and more, technology is moving forward. We're in Star Trek-style stuff already. We just haven't caught up with the level of sophistication that this innovation can develop. When I was reading in Rebecca's book about some of the things that are being invented in India that are already proven to be very effective, that can reduce health care substantially, work with preventative programs. If tumors come up, being able to scan it, we're going to have those scanners. You know, I was talking with a shuttle driver. I'll tell you, it's interesting when you talk to shuttle drivers, they hear a lot of things. And this shuttle driver was telling me it had a conversation with someone many years ago who talked about the development in these think tanks for a scanning device that was depicted in Star Trek. He said the sci-fi application intrigued someone enough, they said, let's develop it. And he said, we're very close to that. And he had had the conversation 10, 15 years ago with someone. So this is what it takes. And when A country, a nation, is economically stable, and they can put their money in development of research, then you're going to be able to move forward. But we have to remember, we also have to support industries like agriculture and so many other things with that same kind of effectiveness. Without food, we starve to death. Without healthy water, we're going to kill ourselves with toxins. So there's so much we need to pay attention to. And I think it's exciting. Be willing to learn. Be willing to grow. Your life is going to be so interesting. You won't want to die when you're 120 because there's so much to look forward to. Speaking of that, we're going to take a quick break. Phone line is open, 888-627-6008. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Donna Siebel here. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Siebel, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. All I need is your first name or your initial, and let me tell you what I perceive. Do men get breast cancer? Yes, they do. It is very common to hear about marathons for breast cancer. Millions of women throughout the country, throughout the world, participate in these marches because they want to raise funds to be able to defeat this insidious disease. Well, breast cancer comes in many forms. Men get it too. And I want to share with you a story about a man, Harvey Singer. Harvey is someone who would never have imagined that this would happen to him. In fact, to walk into a mammogram center, well, that can be a bit unnerving because as a male, he's representative of a very small part of the population, the male population, that actually get cancer. But it does happen. Now, his family had a history of breast cancer. His mother and his sister and his aunt all got breast cancer. So we're looking at something that was genetic in nature. And he said, oh boy, this is something else. Well, his sister Vicky said, I want you to pay attention. We have this gene apparently in our family and you could get it too. He said, wait a minute, I'm a guy. I'm not going to get this. Well, the day came when around his left nipple, he found that there was this irritation and it wasn't going to go away. So, like a lot of guys, he just ignores it. No biggie. Well, one day, he had a pain that went through his chest so intense, and his wife said, you are going to go see the doctor. Well, he was told, you go in for the exam. We've got a caller, so I will tell you the rest of this story after we talk with the caller. Hi, welcome to the show. First name or initial? First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, this is Lisa, and I'm calling from California.
Hi, Lisa. Where in California?
Oh, in San Francisco, the area.
Great. That is beautiful. I love San Francisco. Okay, hon, let's get down to business with you. First thing that I'm looking at is I want you to not give up the fight. There is something that you're working very hard to accomplish, and you've had so many setbacks, and you've been so discouraged with some of the ways that these setbacks have shown themselves that you feel like, oh, maybe I ought to just move to another country or do something different because I'm just not getting any results. Don't give up the fight. You may have to discover a different venue to follow, but don't give up. Keep asking questions. Keep reaching. Keep involving yourself in that is compatible with what you have a passion for. And you're going to find probably within the cycle of 9. I don't know that it's days. It might be weeks or months, but the number 9 is coming through very strongly. It could be September of this year. That's the 9th month of the year. But you want to be able to know that consistency and that persistence has paid off. And it will. It definitely will pay off. So I want you to hold true. It is discouraging at times. That's true. But there isn't a straight line to success. Just keep interacting in the environments, letting people know what you want to accomplish, and be open to any opportunity that might come your way. Do you have a question for me?
I do, and thank you for that. I probably needed to hear that. But my question was actually in regards to relationships.
Okay.
I recently met someone, and I'm wondering what, if anything, you see transpiring from that.
Give me the person's first name or initial.
It's M.
All right. With M, what I'm looking at with M is move slowly. M is very cautious. And what I'm getting is that you could have a real hot sizzling skillet here, and then all of a sudden it's like somebody pours water in it and cools everything down. So you've got a person that has gone through a lot of emotional turmoil here. You don't want to make this move too fast. You want to go slowly with it. You want to cultivate it. You want to understand a little bit about this person. I think this person has a tendency to exaggerate about certain things. So you need to be able to get to the facts about who they are, what they really believe in, what they feel about things. Enjoy the romance is what I'm getting. Don't try to make it into something that it isn't. Allow it to show you its true face. And then you'll know what to do.
Take my time, which is what I'm doing. I'm very cautious, too.
That's a good thing. And I would say, again, enjoy the romance. It's just delightful.
But it could end up as just a really great friendship, is what I think you're saying, which is totally
no,
right.
I think you need to let it show its face. See, you're trying to compartmentalize it already.
Yeah.
I want you to just allow it to be and allow it to show itself.
Got you.
And it will flow. It will flow. I don't know that marriage is in the equation, but let's let this flow. This is an opportunity for you to put your desires into proper application.
Got you. Okay.
Oh, my goodness, Lisa, I'm almost out of time.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling in, dear.
Take care.
This is, my goodness, the hour has just flown by. My appreciation to Rebecca Fannin for being a guest on the show, and my appreciation to you for being a listener. Tell your friends. And by the way, remember always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul, of your destiny. The magic that's inside of you, it needs to be seen by the world. But you know what? You have to discover it within yourself. Nobody's going to do it for you. So take a joy. Enjoy your moment. Be mindful of where you are. Be mindful of what it is that you desire. And then live life with zest. Have a magnificent weekend. This is Donna Siebel. We'll talk with you next Monday, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.